Hello, friends. How are you guys doing? How are the bizarre 2020? How is the bizarre 2020 holiday season going for you? It's honestly, 2020 can see itself out. I'm so over it. But I also don't think though that like, oh, you know, I think that the shift of it turning 2021 will be good mentally. But I also hesitate to think that when that clock strikes midnight, it's all going to be better. I hate to be negative, but, you know, just managing expectations. But maybe, listen, maybe it will. Well, I hope you guys are doing great. I love connecting with you on Instagram. Like, you know, it's, you guys make everything so much more fun to, you know, to connect with you and to, you know, hear your stories of crazy stuff going on and, you know, makes a gal not feel so alone. Not that I'm alone. I got Greg here, but, you know, he only showers like every other day and we're still trying to teach him to brush his teeth. So, you know, there's that. I'm joking. That's mean. It's partially true, though. If I sound like I can't breathe right now, by the way, it's because I somewhat injured my lower back by walking. That's a new one. It makes me feel 100. Granted, I did walk. I went on 3 walks yesterday, short ones around the neighborhood, like 2 miles to 3 miles each. So it ended up being like 9 miles total. So it might have been a little excessive. But yeah, I can't breathe right now. And so I have a waist trainer on, not to get skinnier. I mean, it's not happening right now, just so I can support my back. And so it's kind of hard to breathe while I'm talking. So I apologize for that. Anyways, enough about me and my back. Oh, also, I wanted to say that I'm going to be taking the week of Christmas and New Year's off just to take a little time off. And I will miss you guys, but I'll be back early in the new year. And hey, if you guys have like guest suggestions, I would love to hear it. You can, you know, DM me on Instagram at Rachel, RachelNobrien, or email me at info@rachelbriencomedy.com. I mean, I feel like my guests are always all over the map. But I'd like to hear from you guys. Like who do you want to hear from? Yeah, just any suggestions like of people you want to hear from or subjects you want to hear about. I mean, do you like, you know, show recap things that Greg and I did, that one on The Vow, that, you know, that a show like that everyone is binging, for example? Just, you let me know. I live to serve you. All right, let's get to my guest today, who has just an incredible story. You guys have heard from him before. His name is Jared Lipscomb. He is a celebrity makeup artist, a wonderful friend, and he's also a cancer survivor. He guested on my podcast back in February when he was, you know, like 5 months into being diagnosed. And then shortly after that, he got a bone marrow stem cell transplant, which is really crazy to like enter into the pandemic and then get such a life-changing procedure. But I wanted to check in with him and just really puts things in perspective and just hear, you know, all the like wonderful ways his life has, you know, blossomed ever since such a traumatic event. And he gives really interesting insight into resisting toxic positivity and in his experience, you know, sometimes being called like a fighter or a warrior is detrimental to someone in that situation or in any type of situation. Maybe if you are suffering from depression or any other type of illness, he said it made him feel, and he'll explain it better, but it made him feel like, oh, I got to fight today. And it's like, no, you just have to heal. He's got a lot of interesting insight. He's funny. He's adorable. And I think you guys are going to love him. So he also gives makeup tips. And like very like simple ones that we can do during quarantine because, you know, it's not like we're going to the disco. But yeah, I love that too. So anyways, without further ado, give it up for Jared Lipscomb. Well, thank you so much for doing my podcast again, Jared. I really appreciate it. And I just adore you.
I adore you. I'm so happy to be back and catching up.
Thank you. So I had told you via text that I was going to attempt a new makeup look, but it involved a lot of blending. I think I just don't understand blending or
what part of blending? Are we talking eyes, face, any of it, all of it?
It was the eyes. It's a so I was trying to do like a 90s supermodel like matte look. I just looked up a tutorial. It's more so the pencil eyeliner and then the blending of that just looked like I took a crayon and made a Picasso painting on my face, but not in a good way.
Yeah, the smudging is tough. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's tough business, but I will say you have to remember when it comes to blending like eyeshadows and stuff, it's all about where you hold your brush. So like,
ooh, okay.
Yeah. So, and I feel like people don't really realize that because they think like they see people using it, the type of brush, and it's like, you can really use like almost any type of brush. It's where you hold on the handle, like for a softer blend, you know, for a more firm. So you need to be like really close to the brush to really dig in and far away for like a fluffy, really soft blended look. So that's the real secret is like where you hold the brush.
It's a full on art. It really is. Like the fact that you even have to do that. Like I was literally like switching from the brush blending to then like the smudging thing at the end of one of the eyeliners. And I was like, I look insane. Like I don't, it's very hard. What would you recommend as like a clean, simple makeup look that's easy to do for people and then a glamorous one that's easy to do for people? Because I think I'm pretty good at certain types of makeup, but it's the one thing I know how to do. I can do winged eyeliner.
Yes, once and you are very good at it too. I remember, yes, I've done your makeup one time and I remember you were like really good at doing your wing eyeliner. I was like, I'm not even going to touch this because it looks too good.
Oh, thank you. But I can't deviate from that. I try and I'm like, I look crazy. So what would you recommend for people? So a simple one and a glamorous one.
So for the simple, I would say, I mean, like obviously you need some sort of base, whether that's just a tinted moisturizer, a primer that just like, you know, eats up any oil, if you have oily skin, anything to kind of like give you kind of a clear canvas. Mm-hmm. I would say toss in a bronzer or a blush or both if you're feeling fancy, but like just just something to kind of give dimension around the face. I really like to just use a bronzer just to kind of like warm it up and stuff. But if you want to go for a blush, go for that. Like if you're really fair and you know, a bronzer looks kind of crazy on you.
Can I ask you a quick question about the bronzer?
Yeah.
What is with when people are contouring, they're putting the dark things on the outside of their face? I mean, obviously like the cheekbone stuff, but why are they putting it on the outside of their face?
That like their is forehead to frame and the face. And that's like proper contouring, which it's kind of murky territory when you start contouring with a bronzer. Cause the point of a bronzer is to hit where the sun would hit you. Mm-hmm. So you kind of glow and look vibrant and have vitality. So you're dealing with two kind of different things. So I would say like for something simple, you can still do that kind of technique with a bronzer, but I would say for something simple, stick to a bronzer. You can kind of contour your cheeks with the bronzer and still get like that definition, and you can still hit your forehead with the bronzer. Mm-hmm. But once we start going into like the contouring and the caving out the structure, then we're no longer doing like a simple makeup anymore. We're doing
that's like a lot. Like a,
yeah, yeah. We're kind of getting into like, okay, now we're doing like, you need to like have a cool tone to replicate shadows and like how light would it. So it's just like too much, I think, for like a day to day. And also unless you're planning on being like on camera, like HD on camera, it's not really necessary. The myth of YouTube and the Kardashians is that we need to do this like heavy contour every day. That's not, you know, we don't need to do that.
I think it's kind of out of style now too, that heavy look. It's like,
well, the joke of it is it's always been a thing for in the entertainment industry. It's always been a thing. We've always contoured before the Kardashians, before, you know, in the 19, before there was color television, they were contouring, yeah. You know? So it just became kind of like this trend, and the trend is definitely dying where it's like, you're seeing people who have like two tones of skin, you know, on them, like their base and then their contour. That trend is dying. So that's why for a simple thing, stick to a bronzer. And my favorite little technique is grab like a highlighter, like a universal highlighter, whatever fits your skin tone, pop it on the high points of your cheek, and then pop that on your eyelids.
That's good. I'm writing that down.
Yes, and especially the inner corner of your eyes, because that will instantly wake you up and give you look like a look that you have a little eyeshadow on. Because, you know, a highlighter is a little bit more subtle than like a shimmery eyeshadow because it's skin toned. So, and so it just kind of draws attention to your eyes. You can pop a little down the center of your nose, wherever you like to have it. And I would say, you know, flop on some mascara, maybe fill in the brows and, you know, a little chapstick on the lips, and that's, you're good to go for something simple, but still with like a little radiance and like, you know, a healthy, fresh faced look.
I love it. A very Hailey Bieber look.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So what's an easy glamorous look? Like if you told me to do a smoky eye right now, I'd look crazy. I would not be able to do it. I can't. There's going to be black smudges under my eyes after putting the eye shut. I can't.
Yeah. I would say the easiest, like if you're good, like you're good with your liner. So like stick with what you know. So do a liner. So that's your base. So of course we've already talked about the base. So we've, you know, you've got your foundation on and your bronzer or whatever you like. And so say you like a wing liner. Mm-hmm. So take, what's really popular right now are like cream or, they can be cream eyeshadows. They can be kind of jelly-based eyeshadows. Yeah. They can be anything like that that you can kind of take your finger to. So get one that has like a little, maybe it's got a pop of color to it if you're feeling brave, or maybe it's got like extra shimmer to it. And just honestly take that and just apply it to your lid. And
I love those.
Yeah, they're so easy to use. And then just kind of take another finger, like your ring, a clean ring finger, and then just kind of tap it around so that way it blends in kind of seamlessly. And that will give you, and you can get one in like a burgundy if you want to go for real drama. And you don't need to use a brush because they're, you know, it's cream. So you can kind of just like put it on with the finger, blend it in. And then of course, my favorite thing Rihanna says is if you pop on like a bright colored lip or like a bold lip, she literally says, boys are so stupid, they'll think you have a full face of makeup on. So like when all else fails, if you're horrible at makeup, just literally put mascara on and then put a colored lipstick on and you will look like you have, like you look like you've done your makeup. It's so wild. Maybe a little concealer in their eyes if that's your weak spot. But other than that, like a lip color is your way to go. Experiment with something. You know, it's the holidays.
See, that's crazy because I feel like I always, like, I hate myself with, like, a bold, well, I've tried a few bold lip colors, they're fine, but, like, I always mess those up. I'm worse at that than I am eye makeup. Like, I feel like I'm like that. Do you remember that commercial with that old woman on the plane when she's, like, putting lipstick on and it's going all over her face? That's what I feel like I do with it.
But, well, maybe, like, don't try a matte to start off with if you're new, if you're a novice, you know. Mm-hmm. Try a cream lipstick. Try a lip gloss that's heavily tinted. Mm-hmm. And, but try some experiment with colors because it will really elevate your look if you're, like, you know, well, I guess we're not really going to holiday parties this year. But if you want to look fabulous for your, like, you know, Christmas Zoom party for dogs. Yeah.
Party, yeah.
Yeah.
You're
red. Do burgundy, do purple, do a pink, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Actually, Greg's cousin got married. Greg, my boyfriend, his cousin got married about a year ago. And I've never seen her with a bold lip before. She chose to do it on her wedding day. And I was like, that was a bold choice, but it looked so good. It was a dark burgundy against her white dress. And I was like, I'm impressed with that choice. It does look really good.
That's interesting. I usually advise people when I was doing kind of more wedding stuff, I usually say like, this is not the time to experiment with a new color or a new shade.
I would think so too, but.
But if you're confident in it and you want those photos to have that, you know, that pop, then go for it. Like if you're a girl to wear a red lip every day, like if your signature is like, I always wear a red lip, then get married in a red lip. But I say whatever your kind of go-to signature is on a day basis, take that and use that as your theme for your wedding day, for your pictures, if you're doing headshots, if you're doing anything like that, anything that's going to be like in a memory.
Yeah.
Like whatever your normal thing is, and then just have a professional or you, based off YouTube videos, elevate it to the next level.
I honestly think that's like the best beauty advice I've ever heard. I just freaked out in my brain right now. Like, yeah, dude, because you don't want to not look like yourself. You don't want to like freak out when you look in the mirror, or if you're getting married, your husband to be like, this doesn't look like you. It's a little weird. Like, elevate what you are normally know works on you. Oh, I love that.
If you're a bronzing queen, like then let's bronze you up. If you love lip, you know, like if you always have like a gloss on, like you always are like, oh, my lips are so chapped, I'm always have some sort of like oil or something on my lip, then you need to do a shiny lip. Like now that's not the day to do a matte lip because you'll hate it, you know?
Yeah, so. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Okay, so let's transition then from talking about stuff that's makeup and maybe more physical appearance oriented and go into, okay, so you did my podcast back in February.
Yes.
And you had been diagnosed with leukemia since August. So yeah, at that point, August. So what's the math on that? 5 months?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Around that.
Yeah. And so I want to check back in now because so much has happened with you and I can only imagine that you've had a perspective shift. Not that there's anything wrong with being beauty focused, but like personally for me, I'm just kind of sick of all the shit. I want to look nice and stuff, but like, I don't want to be a person that only talks about things like that or looks at Instagram and looks at people's lives that are so great. And like, even like, well, let's say the Kardashians, we were just talking about that too, where it's just like, oh, it's just all money focused. It's just kind of like, I'm just kind of sick of it right now.
Yeah.
Do you feel that you've had a major perspective shift from what you've endured recently?
I mean, I would say after this insane year and a half, like on a personal level, and then you have the global level, and then you have the national level. I mean, there's so many things at play. I would say that the weird part about going through something so life-changing is it does shift your focus. But it's not like this grandiose. It's not like all of a sudden I woke up and was like, oh my gosh, like I'm in the process of beating cancer and like it looks like I'm gonna get through this and survive, and that's the track I'm headed on down now. But it's more subtle. It comes to me in the little moments. And it'll be something like this. Like I'll take a walk, which I recently just posted like my accomplishment of like, I'm able to walk again, like I was doing like 10 to 15 minutes a day up to the 30 minutes, which they were trying to get me to do just a few short months ago. And now I'm walking like hours a day.
And you were absolutely glowing in that photo. And you are now too. I said before I started recording, the whites of your eyes are so like, I mean, you look like the epitome of health right now to me.
Thank you. But it's not a giant perspective change in the sense of like, I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, like everything that I've ever known is thrown out the door and it's a whole new me. It's much more nuanced than that. And it's the little things like I walk, and now I walk instead of like with my head down and like kind of focusing on like thinking about whatever stupid stuff I would be thinking about. Like, when's my next makeup job coming? What am I going to do about this? Like what? Oh, this was bothering me. Like whatever. None of that. Now I'll look and I'll be like, look at that tree. Like that tree is so pretty, you know? And it's kind of like these weird little really moments cool. that I have. And then I'll be like, oh my gosh, I've never been like that. Like I'm type A, I'm neurotic. Like I'm, you know, kind of controlling and like to control everything and know what's going to happen next. And all of a sudden I'm just like, there is this like laid back energy that comes with it. Cause it's like, you've been through the worst, and it's like, I mean, it's, technically anything can make it worse, but it feels like I've been through the worst and like it can only get better. And even like the idea of what better is still like, it's better no longer means like winning the lottery and having $1 billion to like, it means now like, yeah, like I can walk with my friends, you know, safely with a mask on outdoors, but I can do it for hours now. And like for the past year and a half, I haven't been able to do that. So it's the little things really.
But so much about that just made me so happy. You were forced to kind of slow down a little bit. Would you say you're grateful maybe it happened because it changed you in a way that you wouldn't maybe normally have been changed?
I mean, I would say that with like a heavy dose of like, with the knowledge that I can't change anything that happened in the past, like mm-hmm. obviously I would love to have not put my body through everything that it went through,
yeah.
of course, because yeah. there's going to be side effects for the rest of my life because of chemo and because of a transplant and all of this stuff. But I have found myself saying, which shocked me very much. I've actually found myself saying, like, you know what? Like, I'm like, since I got cancer, I'm glad I got it when I did and how it happened and everything that transpired around it. I'm not like resentful against it. I've kind of went through that phase of like, why did this happen to me? Like, I've already gone through that, like, why me phase, like crying, you know, hysterically, why me, why me? I'm over that because it's nothing I can do about that. And yeah, the next phase is kind of just like, I am it, in a weird way, you know, it's opened up other opportunities for me and it's kind of widened my horizon of like what I want to do with life. And also realizing like, there's not so much pressure on what I have to do with life either. Like there's no level of success, like succeeding, like by literally like being alive makes you really question like why you were so obsessed with something like, you know, I don't know, like booking a magazine cover, like doing the makeup for a magazine cover, which is, you know, like I'm going from one extreme to another because obviously my field is very, you know, vapid and shallow and looks focused. And I have this newfound introspective, life is so short, life is so meaningful, the people around you are so important. Like that's the kind of stuff that I'm thinking now. So it's been interesting kind of blending those two together and trying to think like, what's next? How do I do this? You know, so it's, yeah, it's definitely, I am grateful overall that I'm not grateful that I've had cancer, but the experience, I'm grateful that it has taught me something and that I'm still here to be able to learn from it, you know?
Yeah. I love that you said blending the two together because I was thinking when you were talking, I was like, well, is it kind of like, well, the worst has already happened. I mean, obviously it could get slightly worse, but the worst has already happened. So it can only go up from here. Type of thing. That could be one extreme, but I feel like you've kind of blended like, this has been bad, but I appreciate it. And I'm grateful for probably your own strength in going through it and handling it the way that you did. Where do you come in on the toxic positivity then when it comes to like, you know, because you're like, oh, I noticed a tree and I am appreciative of it. Where do you kind of stop on not being overly like, everything has been so great. My whole life changed because I got sick and like, it's so great because I learned so much and you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really love when I discovered the concept of toxic positivity, which is kind of a huge trend on social media where you'll see people just saying like, wake up, every day is a great day. This is the first start of the rest of your life. Like you've got to, you know, it just all of that.
Like, it's like nonsense. Relax. Yes. Just relax it's a just little nonsense. Bit.
And I understand the thing is like, I'm speaking, you know, just to clarify from my personal perspective of someone who literally went through it. And I know that there are people who fight cancer who have different approaches to it. But for me, I was drilled in at the very beginning of my treatment of this, like, mindset of like, you are a fighter and you know, you're so strong and you've got to be a warrior and you've got to fight this because you have to beat this. And this whole rhetoric around cancer being this like war and like you're this war hero did not resonate with me and it never resonated with me.
It kind of gives me anxiety when you say it. I feel that for you, like, okay, but what if I'm really sad about it? Like, am I in trouble now because I'm not being a warrior for you people? Like,
yeah. And it's weird too, especially because, you know, I was obviously so vocal about sharing my story on Instagram, which has been overall a very positive experience. But, and I love to do it because it was such an outlet for me to kind of vent and to express any concerns that I had. So I know like you get the, you know, and I know the well wishes that I got from people being like, you're such a fighter. You're such an inspiration. I appreciate all those well wishes. I don't disregard them, but internally when people would say like, you have to battle and it was just such you know, the gift packages that I would get that all the themes around cancer patients, because just like anything else, it is an industry. And so I would get a lot of cancer things.
That is, you know, so gifts. Weird to think about. God, it is an industry. It is,
and some of it's really great, you know, like specific items that are designed. And it's like, this is good. I'm happy this exists because like, this is something you don't think about unless you're sitting in a hospital room and don't want to wear a gown, but you need to unbutton the side of a t-shirt. Like, I'm glad those t-shirts were made, you know? So, But I do remember specifically crying to my mom saying, like, Mom, I'm not, like, I was as weak as I've ever been. I could barely lift my head up. I had gone through the toughest round of chemo. And I was like, Mom, I'm not strong. And everyone says I need to be strong to beat this. I'm not going to. And so my head, because I was spiraling so much, my head said, you're not going to beat this because you're not strong because you don't feel strong. And everyone tells you the only way you can beat this is to be strong. And so my mom, who is, you know, a saint, was like, Jared, you don't have to do anything. She's like, you're that's strong awesome just advice. By existing. And she's like, people are just trying to, and people are trying to just encourage, you know, they're just encouraging you and mm-hmm. they don't know how to encourage you. And this has just been the rhetoric that is used in the cancer community. So mm-hmm. they're just kind of regurgitating this thing that people think they want to hear or whatever. And some people really do. It really does resonate to tell them, like, yeah. you are a fighter. And I get that. I understand. But like, that's not me, sis. You know, like mm-hmm. I'm not the one to say, you know, I'm not the
but
one.
But I think that's actually more mentally healthy. I think it's actually, instead of pretending, I mean, well, okay, like you said, some people that does work for them and maybe, but if I take it down several notches, not from cancer, but just like in just being kind of like depressed in life, you know, when you see people on Instagram, they're like, I'm so fine. Ah, and it's like stars behind their eyes. You're like, you don't seem fine.
Yeah.
And they're constantly like preaching, like, you got to be positive. You got to do all these things. And it's like, I know that that's like helping build them up a little bit, but it's also like, I'm wondering, okay, so do you feel like being, you know, overdoing it, let's say, like I said earlier, like taking it down, you know, several notches of like people that talk on social media about like, I got up every day and I'm just so happy and I'm so fine and it's so great. And I just, if I just work out and I eat vegan and I do these things, I'm just so wonderful. Do you think that not admitting to yourself that maybe you're just a little sad because you went through a breakup or you lost your job or the pandemic's happening or, so I'm saying like a smaller level than cancer, obviously it's way bigger, that's more harmful to people's mental health? And was that harmful to your mental health to be like, I have to be this warrior?
Yeah, I mean, I would say entirely that whole vibe of being like, I'm okay, like, look how happy and healthy I am. I think that's extremely harmful. And I think it's especially harmful for the young people who are prone to depression and mm-hmm. especially comparing themselves on social media. And, you know, I get it a lot from, I have to really balance on my own Instagram of just what I post, because I get so many messages from people who've gone through the same thing being like, I don't know how you've done this and maintain such a positive energy and spirit. And I have to tell them, oh no, I haven't. I haven't maintained a positive mm-hmm. spirit. Like I am very positive in general. I'm a positive person and I'm an appreciative person, but I have to remind them like, no, this was not easy. I'm not one of those people, you know, there's certain people who are currently battling cancer who, you know, get up and do TikTok dances and show like they've got this. And like,
I can't even do that. And I don't have cancer.
Yeah, I know. And it's just, so it's just a different mindset. And I think, I personally think it's not healthy in general. I've been on TikTok some just because out of sheer boredom. And I've noticed I've been targeted with these like really aggressive forms of like positivity, like, hey, you stop scrolling. You are beautiful. You are loved. I love you. And it's like, that is so insincere.
Yeah.
It's so
ooh, insincere is a good word for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just kind of all ties back into that same, you know, giant envelope of toxic positivity. And obviously it's more nuanced with the cancer and being a cancer fighter, because you are technically fighting cancer. Like, I get that. But I personally like did not want to be called a fighter ever. Anytime someone mm-hmm. would say fighter, I would get chills down my bones because I thought there was something I needed to be doing. And so I just love to destigmatize that myth. Like there is, if you are sick in any form, if you're depressed, if you're anxiety, if you're, you know, whatever the case is, like you don't have to actively be doing anything. I mean, don't be the opposite of proactive, whatever that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't, you know, you don't like smoke cigarettes if you have lung cancer, obviously. But mm-hmm. like, you know, there's, you don't have to actively do anything. You don't have to get up and be like, look at me being a warrior. Like, look at me.
Because that might be healing is not doing anything. You're just letting your body heal. You're enjoying, like what you were saying, looking at a tree, enjoying the like small things and just allowing yourself to heal. And I feel like I can see how that would have been hard originally for you, maybe because you, when you said you're type A, I would imagine you might be a bit of a perfectionist.
Yep.
Yeah. Same. And so it's very, I can't even watch TV half the time without doing something else and working. Like, I don't even know how to like, and that, you know, is very unhealthy for people. And I could see where it would be a total shift for you to be like, I'm just existing today and this is nice. And I got mm-hmm. nice friends and my family and your skin's amazing and you're still super handsome and you don't look sick anymore. That is one thing like that it was, I don't know if this is weird to say, well, no, I don't feel weird about it because my dad had cancer too. And all this, one day he looked 70, which you don't look that, but he was 39 and he looked 70 years old when he was really sick. And then it was like, once he got better, it was like, you're back to you again. Like what? Like I felt that so much in that photo where you were talking about going on walks and a trainer and all that. I was just like, I even showed my mom and she was like, he looks amazing. Cause I think she's followed you a little bit too. Like you all of a sudden just like, it like happened kind of.
Yeah.
Which I know it's not all of a sudden, it's a process, but that is probably you relaxing and taking care of yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And then of course, like my medicines have gone down and the treatments have, you know, ended and stuff like that. So it's a combination and it will happen. And that is the part, like the positivity that I like to, you kind of like give to people mm-hmm. if they follow me. It's like this kind of like, there is hope, but you don't have to try so hard. And if your way mm-hmm. of coping is to get on social media and to be like, I am going to be okay. I am a fighter. If that's what gives you hope to keep going, then do it. But mm-hmm. don't fall into the trap, which is what happened.
That's what you have to do.
Yeah. And then people thought it would be helpful for me to see other people in, you know, like send me Instagrams of other people who are in similar positions as me, like, you know, in the midst of a cancer battle or something, which I appreciate, you know, and I can think, but I was not able to look at anything because it didn't serve me in that time because I was so traumatized from my diagnosis and my world just became this, you know, echo chamber of just my health. Mm-hmm. So like, it didn't help me to see other people kind of thriving during their cancer battle. Mm-hmm. It's better. I find it better after the fact. And I feel like it resonates more with people because I've got a lot more responses to like, now that I'm 9 months out of my transplant, I've got a lot more responses by people who've just started their, you know, journey with a leukemia or with a transplant. And it's, that gives much more comfort to see someone who's like, okay, he made it past that rough part. And then like, and then I'll of course message anyone who messages me and say like, okay, this is the worst part. Like day 11 of your transplant is going to be really bad. Most likely. Like it's really weird how universal these feelings are. Like no matter who you are, like there's certain timestamps that's like, this is going to be a bad day. Like, trust me. And you know, around 3 months, you'll start to feel a little bit better. And then you'll stop eating entirely 3.5 months in. And then, you know, so it's complicated, but yeah, I definitely don't agree with toxic positivity. I am mm-hmm. a positive person, but don't overdo it, you know?
Yeah. But I think saying it's complicated is describes it well. I think even for my listeners, like, you know, even if you're not going through cancer treatment, just in a daily basis, like some days it will help you to look at other people and be like, oh, they struggled and now they're thriving. But some days you just need to stay in your own lane and not pay attention. Just like figure out what's working for you, I think, mm-hmm. On a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you are impressive. Okay. So I got to get my next question. Okay. So what's one thing you could go back and tell your pre-cancer self about life and advice? Like what are you shocked by that you didn't know, you know, before this? Like what's one piece of advice?
I mean,
or several if you want to give them.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest one would be just like, don't worry so much. Like I'm such a worrier. I'm an anxious person. I've got, you know, clinical depression and clinical anxiety, which is obviously a mental health disorder. Mm-hmm. And so there's not a lot I could do about that aside from like, you know, speak with therapists and, you know, take medication if needed and stuff like that. But I would say, like, on a micro level, don't worry about things the way I worried. Because I used to worry about so many little things from, like, it could be something for my job, like, you know, when I was a server and it would, like, I had a bad table and it would affect me for so long. And, like, that table pissed me off so, and I would be so mad at them for so many days, you know, and, like, talk about it and tell all my friends about this horrible table that I had. Or when I became a makeup artist and, like, worked with on a shoot with someone who was horrible, like those girls, Steamy Hayes, like, I had a horrible shoot with them. And, like, I will always put them on blast because they are actual horrible people. But the thing is, like, I was so mad and so bothered by it at the time, instead of being like, who cares? Like, they suck and their life sucks because they're so miserable. Like, don't let that misery enter into your world, you know? And so I wish I would have known that, because that's like, because if I knew I was going to get cancer, I would be like, oh my gosh, like, you have such bigger fish to fry. Like, this is so microscopic on the scale of, like, what's important in your life and in your lifetime. Like, is dealing with, like, people being unhappy with a makeup look or anything like that. Like, those little things. Cause, like you said, I am a perfectionist. So, like, a lot of my stuff would be like, just don't be such a perfectionist. Like, just let it be. I mean, I know in my job, I obviously have to be a perfectionist to some degree.
No, but you don't. Do you know what I mean?
That's, like, that's
but
true.
Like, maybe your client wouldn't even notice if you mess something up. And also, again, who cares? But that's easier said than done. I mean, again, I'm the same way, but, you know, who cares? And I feel like you're giving, like, the, who are the girls?
Simi Hayes. They're Kardashian adjacent.
Well, okay. So, but, like, don't you feel like you were giving them more power by getting upset?
Yes, exactly.
It's just it's almost like I have, maybe I have too big of an ego where I'm just like, I'm going to give you that power. I'm not going to give you that. You're not going to take that from me.
Yeah, and the power that had, that horrible shoot. I mean, I still talk about it because I love to just, like, you know, be like, you need to be a kind, good person, or else people will eventually, it'll catch up.
No, I'm glad that you do. I wish I talked about things more that were a bigger deal.
So I will very publicly say that. But it sucks to think like that, when that happened, that it bothered me for so long. And it's just like, dude, you don't care. You know, like, it's not going to matter in a year, and it's definitely not going to matter in 2 years when you're sitting in the hospital and you're rallied around by so many people, you know, helping you with your medical bills and helping lift your spirits and, like, you know, sending all of their love and prayers and whatever they choose to send to you. Like, you're not going to care about it. And I didn't. And I don't now. I mean, I only bring it up now because it's just so funny to call out.
Compare, and,
yeah, to compare to, like, the mindset then versus now. And now it's like, damn, now, like, I wouldn't even, like, I would never work with them. Even if, like, I was given the opportunity. Like, there are people I wouldn't work with at all, because I would just be like, nah, I got to keep this vibe in check, you know?
Yeah. And do you feel like you could end up being more successful by having that discerning attitude of, like, you know, before maybe you'd be like, I'll take any job and I got to do it perfectly and I got to, you know, whatever. But, like, do you feel like now you might end up being more successful because you're being discerning of, like, that's not the right vibe for me. I don't think that person is, they might be Kardashian adjacent, but.
Yeah, no, I've already adapted that. I mean, of course, I'm not actively working now because I'm still immunocompromised and there's a pandemic. So work is already limited. So I'm not actively working anyways. But even if I were, I already know, and planning, like, for the new year and assuming, like, things kind of, you know, slowly inch back to a more normalcy and my immune system will be better, you know, at some point next spring. I don't have any intention to, like, to hustle in that sense. And I don't feel the need to. I feel the need to surround myself with good people. And that's another big lesson, is, like, this positivity and good people. I want to spend my time with that. It really does. It's so cliche and it's so cheesy, and you really don't understand until you're literally told by a doctor, like, oh, it's like, you know, you have this percent chance of dying. It does take that sometimes for you to get that kick in the ass to be like, oh wow, like, life is short. You know, there are things that matter more than other things. And so knowing that is its own form of power. And I've definitely adapted that power to for my own benefit. And you will not see me working on some random ass shoot with some random ass person that doesn't, you know,
in like Torrance, California, where you're yes. like, I had to drive all the way out there. I don't know why I just attacked Torrance, but
justice for Torrance, but no, those days are done because it's just like, I know what I value. And
do you think you had to adopt a lot of patience though, too, where like patience with your healing, but also patience when it comes to work stuff of like, okay, well, I'm going to say no to these things, which is probably maybe against your natural instinct to like be an A type person, but know that like you're meant for something different and like, oh, well, maybe there'll be a career shift for me that maybe it's not all about what I was doing before. Maybe this life experience called me to do something else and maybe connect with people on a different level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say like, I'm definitely starting to, you know, as I slowly get healthier and healthier, I'm starting to really realize what is important to me and what, you know, what kind of work I could do that would fulfill me. Cause I do love doing makeup, but I know that's not my, you know, I always have said I fell into doing makeup. It was never my passion. It is definitely like my artistry and I love to do it on myself, but it's never been like my passion. I don't wake up and say like, I can't wait to create this like insane look. Like, and some people that is their mm-hmm. canvas. That is their passion. That is how they love to, do things. And I have loved being an ambassador for Be The Match, and I've loved working mm-hmm. with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and raising funds and spreading awareness and all of that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, I don't know what the future will hold specifically career-wise, but it's definitely opened the door and opened my mind from, again, that type A where you kind of get tunnel vision of like, okay, this mm-hmm. is what I need to do and I need to keep doing this to continue to be successful in this field. And now I realize, oh my God, I can, you know, I can do makeup. I can work as an ambassador for Be The Match. I can raise funds for the society, the Leukemia Society, and I can spread awareness. I can use my social media for all of this kind of stuff. And I could directly help young cancer patients. I could directly help young gay cancer patients who are just mm-hmm. like, you know, there's nothing out there for people who identify as like LGBTQIA+ who are battling cancer. So, and a lot of the, also going back to toxic positivity, a lot of the rhetoric for healing with cancer is religious based. And some people don't have, you know, aren't religious. And, mm-hmm. you know, I consider myself spiritual, whatever. That's my personal, you know, personal stuff. But it's interesting to see how many people would send me messages like, God bless you. And, you know, prayers for you. And even to this day, I still get comments, which again, I appreciate all every bit of love. I'm not going to turn it down. But I find it interesting that people are like, when people comment stuff like, God has been watching you this whole time.
Well, especially when like, God is or the religious communities have turned on gay people so many times. Like, that's insulting almost.
Yeah.
You weren't there for me when I came out of the closet. You didn't yeah. want me in your church, but okay.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So I would love to, you know, work in that space of kind of, you know, finding a community for people who don't have the community. Because I was mm-hmm. lucky, I will say, like, you know, that's where certain levels of privilege come in to play. And it's like, I was lucky to have, you know, hundreds of visitors. I mean, I think the first day decided to start sharing my cancer journey was the day I got diagnosed. And, you know, there were articles written about it and there were, you know, so many messages in my DMs, I couldn't check them all. And they disappeared before I could get to seeing them all and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I realized that I'm lucky to have that support system. So knowing that in hindsight is like, now, like, I want to be able, hopefully, to provide some semblance of that to other people in my situation or similar situations. How that will work out yet to be determined, but yeah. I definitely know that's like a passion that I've developed that would have never existed had this not happened.
Can you explain to me why gay cancer patients are maybe underrepresented or don't have as much of a support? I'm truly curious, and maybe my listeners are too, because I wouldn't. Why would that be any different than?
Yeah, I think, well, in general, young people with cancer is already underrepresented. It was very hard in general to find a support community I did, before the pandemic, I would go in between chemo treatments to a support group, and I was the only LGBTQ person there. So it was already kind of very you know, I don't mind being around straight people. I know there's certain gay people who are very like, you know, like feel very insecure and unsure of themselves and being their true authentic self in front of like a group of straight people. Uh-huh. I personally don't have that problem. But imagine, if you will, being someone in a small town in the middle of the Midwest who gets diagnosed and you are either closeted or you've come out, but not so publicly because you know you can't be, you know, your true authentic self. And then you get this sickness and then you just have nowhere to lean on. So it's so, because cancer is isolating immediately. Cancer is already isolating because it's so, you know, it affects certain people and it doesn't affect others. And then most everyone has had some sort of been affected by cancer in some capacity, but to be a young person affected by it is already a weird club.
It's pretty rare. Yeah, it's pretty rare.
And it's a weird club to be in. And then on top of that, then you throw in another factor of like being, you know, an other. And so then you're already, so it's just like layers of isolation on top of isolation.
Yeah, I can see that now. Yeah.
So that's where it's kind of like with being gay or being queer or being trans and something and dealing with like a serious medical issue. And then you don't know the person's family life, if they're being supported. And so then if they're doing it on their own, then that's even more isolating, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just layers to the isolation when you are young, queer, with cancer.
Yeah. You just had to add all the things. You had to do all of them all at once.
But I had to support a family. So luckily I did not have to deal with that kind of thing, because I could not imagine doing it on my own. So
did you have anyone that kind of left your life because of it was just too much to deal with? Like for example, I know, and I want to have her on my podcast soon, and she has done it before. Before she got breast cancer, she was engaged to a real successful guy. She's about around my age, early 30s. She got cancer, and from what I can see from her Instagram, they broke up pretty much within like a month of her getting it. And I just can't imagine that loneliness and devastation of...
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, I was in a 3-year relationship while I got cancer, and 2 months into it, my former boyfriend did break up with me 2 months into my cancer diagnosis.
Was it too much for him? What was it?
You know, I don't want to shine too much light on him just because it's a very dark time to think about. The saying, the words I got from him were, you know, this has been a long time coming. We've drifted apart, whatever, whatever, and so forth. And, you know, we're dealing with a manipulative person. It was my first serious relationship. So you're like trying to make it work on every level. Before I got sick, we were already trying to make it work, especially me, because it was my first serious relationship. And, you know, for the first like 3 to 4 months after that happened, I was very bitter and wanted nothing more than revenge and all the things that go with like a devastating breakup when you think someone's going to be that you're going to marry or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I can't remember what, you know, flimsy excuse he gave to try to distance it from being cancer related. I can't even believe, even talking about it now, I can't believe the shift I've had over the thought process. And this just ties back into like what you realize is important. And now I realize like that relationship, even though it was 3 years and at the time, it was the most significant relationship of my life and so, you know, powerful and all of this stuff. And now I look back, you know, over a year now since we've been broken up, and I'm like, wow, that was a blip in the pan. Like that.
Isn't that
radar.
So crazy? I mean, yours is a little more extreme because you had cancer, but like there's this is good for my listeners. It's so many people will message me. They're just so heartbroken over a breakup. I'm like, God, I've been through so many. They seem like such a big deal at the time. And then it doesn't even take that long half the time. Sometimes it will take, you know, like a year or something, or sometimes it'll take even just like a month to be like, did I even like that person that much? Like it's, it doesn't really matter after a while. Like, even I love Greg so much. I think he's my person. I think we're going to get married, all that. But I'd be able to survive if we broke up. Like, it's
really wild. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so fine. It's all fine.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, it is fine. And that's the wild part about it, is that like for a while I would not talk about it. I was like, I'm not going to talk about it. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't think I would be able to without spewing like so much hatred and like that. Yeah. You know, that does not serve.
Yeah. You want to like keep that in check a little bit.
Yeah, well, just because I don't want to, I just don't want to put out that kind of energy. Like, why should I, you know, like, I don't, it doesn't mean no good to, like, have this, like, burning revenge and hatred in me. And so now that it's gone,
well, you can talk about it with your close family and friends, maybe just not
which
publicly.
Which I did in my therapist. Mean,
which
stuff,
sometimes you know? It's hilarious to do that, too.
Yeah, and it was very cathartic to kind of talk about it and for all my friends to kind of be like, you know, pull the good friend card and say, you know, like, we never liked him anyways. And yeah. Like, he did this and he did that and whatever, whatever. But like overall, now that I'm a full year out of it, and I've been, you know, about 4 or 5 months ago, I realized, I woke up and was like, oh, like I'm over this. And it felt really good. Cause I felt like
such a good feeling.
Together, I was like, and breaking up during like one of the most significant times of my life. I was like while, you know, being diagnosed with cancer, I thought I would never be able to like separate him from my cancer experience. And now it's like, I'm so glad it happened at the beginning, because now like I have had this whole journey since him that's been so amazing and so, you know, so powerful, and so many amazing things are coming my way and just keep happening. And it's like, I'm so glad he didn't kind of like do that shady thing where he sticks around for the recovery and then breaks up when I'm better. Because then he would have been attached to this story of my like blossoming into the person who I think that I was meant to be, you know? So
don't give him the credit of that though, because I think what's really cool, what I just heard you say though, is that like you're grateful he wasn't a part of the process, like, or like you decided early on, like you got over the experience. You chose it, I think, more so than him breaking up with you. You chose it, which I think is great. Like, it's that, yeah, don't give him that credit. You chose that.
Yeah.
You definitely did. Okay, so let's end on one last question. And you can take a pause if you need to think about it. Because I didn't tell you this one beforehand. What would be your best advice for someone not going through something as extreme as your... Well, it can apply to that. But because everyone is struggling during the pandemic right now, I mean, unbelievably so... Because you are granted a certain amount of wisdom from going through what you've gone through and strength and all that. What would be your best advice for someone who's really going through the trenches right now, who really thinks like this cannot get any worse?
Mm-hmm. You know, I would say it's kind of like a two-part thing. And part number one, you need to know, like, reach out for help. So I don't care if you're struggling financially, find an organization that can help you. If you can't get groceries, I mean, I know people who are literally struggling to eat right now.
Yeah.
Find organizations that can help with that. Don't let any sort of embarrassment or shame or anything you feel hinder the help that you need. Like, reach out to resources, whether that means calling your mom, calling a friend, be open and share what's going on. That's been a lesson that I've learned after all of this. And I am, again, very lucky to have such close friends. And I have a large group of close friends, which I'm really happy about. But even if you just have one sibling that you talk to or a cousin, don't be afraid to be their burden. Like, oh, I don't want to burden them with this. Realize, like, it's okay to be someone's burden. And then the crazy thing is, people are really willing to help. Mm-hmm. If you are willing to ask for it. And I would say, like, that realization was so kind of mind-blowing. Like, oh, like, because I needed a lot of help. I needed help financially because I didn't have insurance at the beginning of my whole ordeal. I needed help when my ex left and I had to get a new apartment. I needed help with when I was starting to get asked back to work. I had to find a makeup artist, my dear friend Anais, I love you, who would cover my jobs but not be so cutthroat that she would try to steal my clients, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I had so many levels of needing help for months. It would be a new thing for help. Then I had to see a therapist. Then I needed their help. And then I had to, you know, and then the crazy thing about that is you'll start to want to help other people. And when mm-hmm. you start helping other people, the cycle kind of like Sierra, level up, you know?
No,
like
you're sweet. That makes me so happy.
Well, but you'll start. So if you're struggling and you ask for help and you receive that help, the next thing that's going to happen is you're going to help someone else. Mm-hmm. And you won't believe it when it happens. All of a sudden you're going to be like, wait, am I helping this person? And that's exactly what happened to me. All of a sudden I started getting messages, and I'm really close to this one follower of mine who literally got diagnosed with AML, found me through, you know, the social medias, Be The Match, whatever, whoever's Instagram I was featured on that day. He found me and he was like, you look like me. You're gay. You have the exact same type of cancer. You just got a bone marrow transplant. All of this stuff is what I'm going to have happen. And so all of a sudden I went from being the person who needed all the help to the person who was able to supply the help. And that kind of full circle moment will save you from whatever trenches you are dug so deep in. And so I just encourage, I know it's hard to do when you're in the moment. I know it's hard to do. I know it's hard to A, reach out for help. And I know it's impossible to think that you could ever offer help to anyone else because you're so weighed down by whatever's going on in your life. But I can assure you, once you start asking for help, the turnaround for you being the person to help others is going to occur, and you are going to feel the lifting that you will feel from within is going to be so powerful that you, the things that have been weighing you down are going to start to dissipate, you know, mm-hmm. but you have to be willing to ask for help. And I think that's the most important thing no matter whether you're going through a breakup, whether you're going through financial issues, whatever the case is, you need to ask for help. And that needs to be step number one. We need to normalize not being okay and normalize saying, I need help, you know?
I totally agree. I don't think there's ever been a podcast where I wanted to cry so many times during it, but out of happiness. Like I am truly, truly impressed by you. And I think that I'm impressed by your bravery to be raw and honest and ask for help and to talk about your mental health and how, like, it's not just it's the opposite of the toxic positivity. Like that is so touching because it's true. Like, that's just not how shit goes. Maybe it works for some people, sure. But like, it's not always pick yourself up by your bootstraps and just be always positive. Like, that's pretty damaging after a while to people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, I just am unbelievably impressed by you, and I adore the hell out of you. I really do. I'm excited for what you're going to do. I know this is weird to say, but I honestly think that you getting leukemia changed you in a way. And I mean, I didn't know you that well before, I guess, but I think it seems that it's shown you a perspective of like a bigger life than you could have even have had, maybe.
Oh, totally. Totally. My thoughts were so small and so, I don't want to say self-absorbed, because we're all self-absorbed in the sense that we need to live, we need to make money, we need to be, you know, we are ourselves. So we're allowed to be self-absorbed, but just the thought process has shifted. The entire outlook of how I view life and how I view my life going and what I value, and every aspect has shifted. And for that, I am, going back to asking about being grateful for that, I am actually grateful for it, because now I've got, I hate to say the term, like, a new lease on life, because it's such a cliche, but you know, sometimes it's a cliche for a reason, and the shoe kind of fits. And so I am really, really glad for that.
Yeah, I believe it. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I absolutely adore you. Tell everyone where they can find you on social media. And
yes, well, I'm pretty much just on Instagram It's at Jared Lips, and I'm very responsive. I give makeup tips every day in the DMs. I give, you know, anyone who's battling cancer, I love to give them like any advice, any pick me up that I can give. Sometimes I'm known to send out packages to people. Like,
oh, that's
sweet. I'm a little crazy on there, but you know, I have all the time in the world. So please, you know, feel free to reach out and let's connect on Instagram, and I can keep you posted with anything and everything that'll be coming up in the new year with me. And I would love that.